Support made possible by Strategic Farm Marketing. Strategic's annual series of crop insurance and grain marketing meetings are currently underway across the Midwest. Go to www.sfarmmarketing to register for a meeting near you.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 17th day of January 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And Eric Snodgrass from Nutrient Ag Solutions will join us to take a look at the weather forecast. We'll also hear the beginning of Commodity Week, and if you can stay with us for the whole hour, you'll hear the whole of that programming. Otherwise, you'll find it on our website in its entirety right now at willag.org and hear it on many of these radio stations over the weekend.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, in Chicago on this Friday, futures finished higher. The nearby March corn, taking back all its losses, finished at 389 and a quarter, up 13 and three quarters. The May at 395 and a quarter, 12 and three quarters higher. And July at 401, up 12. September futures, 9 and three quarters higher. In December contract for the day at 402 and three quarters, 8 and three quarters of a cent higher. Soybeans nearby March contract at 929 and three quarters, up 5 and three quarters. The May at 943, 5 and three quarters higher. In July, beans 5.5 cents higher at 955.5. The November's at 960.5, up 4.25 cents for the day. The bean meal on the afternoon finished the nearby contract. Those numbers just disappeared on me, so we'll just have to see if we can bring them back. And it looks like there's a problem at the CME group in Chicago. That's no big deal because Mike Zuzulo is on the line in Atchison, Kansas, and at globalanalytics.biz to help me out this afternoon. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us. I appreciate you being there today.
Great to be with you, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so it appears, let me see if I can pull some of these numbers back up. No, they just disappeared on me. So how did the bean oil, bean meal, and the wheat finish?
It looks like the bean oil is going to be steady, maybe up about 20 to 30 in the May contract. The March bean meal and the May bean oil, I'm showing steady as well. For soft red wheat, we ended up being up about 5.25 at 570.5 in the March. The May was up a nickel at 571.25. Interesting to note that the soft red wheat and the copper tied for third place in terms of weekly gains this week. So the macro and the micro seems to be coming together finally.
And the livestock numbers, just a quick look at those two.
Yeah, sure thing. February hogs up 67. At 67.67, they're still about $7 over the CME index. April hogs up a quarter at 74.10. Feb fat cattle up 12 at 126.35. April up 77 at 127.20. Feeder cattle up 20 at 145 in the March.
All right, so let's talk about the gains. What happened in the marketplace today for corn?
Well, the gains came from the ethanol, and it was the one that took out the market lows, and we went down to the lowest levels, I believe, in 5 or 6 weeks in ethanol Thursday. Thursday came into Friday, and Friday we had almost a 4% gain in ethanol. And with that, the lead month corn was able to make an outside weekly high, taking out last week's high after taking out last week's low. And that really sets you up technically for some upside. There is a rumor going around that the Chinese were searching for corn out of the Pacific Northwest. It is completely a rumor right now. Some have heard it, some have not. Some are agreeing with it, some are saying it's bunk. But it would not surprise me at all at this point if that was what was going on.
It seems like they might have a problem just finding corn coming out of the Pacific Northwest.
Well, yeah, now we know why they're the best traders in the world. It's because we're the worst. And, you know, after what we did to prices Thursday, why wouldn't they want to go ahead and buy corn at that discount of a price in the futures market especially?
Yeah, so again, bring me back to the ethanol. Was there a reason why it popped?
No, I think most of this is fun-driven, Todd. I think this is where, you know, in today's world of longs versus shorts and who carries the futures premium or discount is going to be up to the funds. And I think that's exactly what happened in the ethanol. We did see a stocks build. because we went up to production levels we hadn't seen last September. We also saw Mexico come in and cut their not go ahead and increase their ethanol blend. The Supreme Court decided not to do that. But you know why that is, Todd? Because they're going to be down in terms of a production number for Mexican corn, probably down about 20% this year. And they're going to be looking at some substantial imports. And this is the frustrating part of the corn market from Thursday. The trade deals were not negative. And we have a lot of other fundamentals out there that are very positive. So obviously, Friday was a real welcome thing because it made me feel like the fundamentals were back on track.
Yeah, so Wednesday, Thursday, hopefully you didn't get too scared about those 2 days and things are back in line today. Next week, do you think we can get some follow through? And again, we won't start trade actually. We'll have a closing market report on Monday, but it's MLK day. So trade won't open back up, I think, until Monday evening now.
I do think we'll get follow through. And there's three things that I'm going to watch to support that idea. One will be the currencies. And that was the thing to watch after USMCA and the phase one trade deal. And we talked about this on Commodity Week, which you always do a good job. But I thought this last Commodity Week was an exceptional one because of the price decay that we had to deal with when we talked on Thursday afternoon. But you also really nailed down some questions and had us really dig deep. And I thought it was a very rewarding program after listening to it. So the currencies, we saw the Chinese yuan hit a 5 to 6 month high against the dollar this week. Their buying power is increasing. Our selling power is increasing. So why wouldn't they step in and start buying at this point with this phase one trade deal? Number two would be the Argentine weather. There is rain expected in parts of the Pampas regions like Cordoba, but some of those areas are literally at five-year lows as far as their total rainfall. Their deficits are the biggest they've been for this time of the crop year. As they go into corn fill and corn bloom and silking, you're looking at a situation where they're at one of the driest areas they've been in 5 years, literally. Number three would be the issue with the cash market and whether the end users now decide they better step up and start buying. And does that pop the basis at this stage of the game?
All right. Another basis pop. And then, of course, does futures follow along now? Can it begin to move just on short supply or bigger demand or whatever part you want to talk about?
I think it should. I mean, I think this is where when you're making record highs in the equities markets because you see the global trade returning from all these trade deals. And now we saw in the Financial Times or the Wall Street Journal today that President Trump is heading over to India to maybe sign a trade deal with them. So this could go from one of the stickiest, most problematic issues for agriculture to one of the best times for the demand side of agriculture if we can keep this kind of momentum going. So I do think the reasons to be short futures and short agriculture 3 months ago, you don't have those same reasons. And I'll give you a perfect example. The Chinese released today that they were going to go ahead and let 30,000 tons of pork out of their national strategic reserves because of Lunar New Year holidays coming up here very shortly at the end of the month. Well, guess what? They consume 30,000 tons of pork in 6 hours, Todd. And you know, you're talking about a situation where they do have a real substantial commodity shortfall right now in terms of pork, protein, and the need to feed. And I'm not trying to say let's just go out and buy it with both hands, but what we did on Thursday's trade does not make sense to me.
Well, a couple of things. We look far enough out. It doesn't make sense for old crop. Does it make more sense for new crop because of acreage?
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough one because they're both attached to the hip because USDA hasn't given us final numbers. What if my ending stocks number for 1920 is correct and we're at or just below a 1.5 carryover? Doesn't that mean we better start rationing if China's buying and Mexico's buying and our dollar's weak? I think it does. And so it really tells the market, hey, $4 isn't going to cut it for corn as far as acreage base because you're going to have a lot of producers who have good bean basis and want to keep their cash flow tight to go after more beans this year, I think. So I think they're attached to the hip. We talked about this on Commodity Week, and I don't want to overshadow the idea that if you're in a very strong basis area in corn and beans, don't let that out of your sight because there is probably going to be a point where the basis starts to work against the futures if the futures really is turning in a trend-like manner. And I think that's to your question and to your point. We do have to keep those two things separate.
Hey, really quickly, the 2% of soybeans that are still standing in the field USDA gave us, has the trade taken those out of their of the supply and demand balance sheet. And I forgot to ask Lance Honig whether they took them out. Apparently not, because it's not likely they'll be harvested, right?
Yeah, I think because he's doing those five states again, it's both corn and beans the way I read it. So I don't think they're factored in as far as the reduction in yield potential or harvested acres. For me, what we lose domestically, we may gain in Brazil. And so to me, it's a wash.
Okay. It's a wash.
Yeah, we're still tight relative to the last 3 years on world beans, but not as tight as we could have been.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it. And we'll have Commodity Week up in just a second.
Sounds great. I appreciate you too, Todd.
Mike Zuzulo is with GlobalAnalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. That Commodity Week program, by the way, you can hear online right now if you'd like it. WillAg.org, WILLAG.ORG. In its entirety, our guests include Jim McCormick, Garrett Toy, Kayla Roy, and Mike Zuzulo. You'll hear a portion of the program on this station this afternoon. Many of these stations carried over the weekend. And again, in its entirety up online at willag.org right now. Let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. We're joined now by Eric Snodgrass. He's with Nutrien Ag Solutions. Hey, Eric, thanks for being with us. I want to start with the weather system, and it's just a big dog, and it's kind of blanketing the United States. I believe blizzard in the Northwest, winter storm warnings in the Michigan area, and a lot of rainfall and flooding here. So tell me about what we got going on.
Yeah, well, it won't take much rainfall around here to get us back flooding over again. We have been just over the last week and a half, there are some parts of, if you just kind of paint a line from Missouri through Illinois over to Indiana, just looking at that one small sector, we've had between 200 and in some locations almost 600% of normal rainfall. So yeah, it won't take much to give us problems, but this winter storm is quite unique. So it's emerged out of the panhandles and it's moving north. So it's going right straight toward Michigan. And it's a very windy system. So we're going to see strong, we call it synoptic scale winds around us. So big, broad swath of very windy conditions. Now, this is what's cool about this storm. Now, cool from a meteorological perspective. Where we are right here, there's a lot of very, very dry air near the surface. So if you were to go look at a radar image middle of the day today on Friday, you might think that it looks like it's precipitating over the top of us, but it's not getting to the ground yet. We've got to moisten up the lower levels of the atmosphere. But as that happens later on today, you know, I'm talking late this afternoon, we will get over into some very interesting precipitation types. We could start off with a little bit of snow, then move over into some freezing rain, and then more than likely by late tonight and overnight hours, we're going to have enough warm air pushover that we're going to go over to rain. But then as the system leaves, on the backside, we'd have the chance to get some snow. So get ready for a typical Illinois winter storm here, because this sucker is going to come through and it's going to be producing quite a variety of weather for us. Now, you go west of here, north of here, it's a snow event, but the system pushes through and behind it, we actually get some real cold weather in place. So I have the first time in a while that we've seen some cooler weather.
Yeah, that is the first time, I think, in a long while that we've had cold weather. It's been a really pretty moderate winter so far, it seems.
Yeah, you know, we're about halfway through it. And last time we've really seen some sustained below average temperatures, you have to go back to the middle of December. Really, 2 days before Christmas, we got onto this warmer track and we've been in it for quite some time now. In fact, it's been a long time since we've recorded a temperature that's been below average for much of the state. And so, this will be a changeover when this front passes through and the high pressure center settles in behind it. Yeah, we're going to actually, it's going to feel like winter, even though it's not going to be brutally cold, but it's going to feel that way after this comes through.
Anything you're concerned about?
Well, when I look a little bit longer term, I start to think about how the rest of winter is going to play out. And I think our story begins in the Pacific Ocean. You see, we have seen a lack of really deep penetrating cold air coming out of the Arctic. And that's been because the Pacific Ocean jet stream, which has kind of two branches to it, a polar branch and a subtropical branch, well, they've been kind of competing for space over us. The subtropical branch has been winning, which means we just are pushing that really cold air, trying to keep it north, okay? The other thing is polar vortex right now is really strong. And the stronger it is, the lower of a probability we have of getting really cold, sustained cold air into our area. So the cold that's coming in next week is here until we have another system emerge next week, at the end of next week. So when we're talking again next week, we'll probably be going over again another wet pattern in this area. And as long as that subtropical jet stream stays cranked like it is, and the polar vortex stays strong, we will have a hard time keeping sustained cold around. And you asked about concern. My concern is, statistically, historically, good cold winters lead to better starts to the growing season. It has a lot to do with pest control, has a lot to do with what the freezing temperatures do to the topsoil. And without, you know, really getting good and cold, it's well, let's call it less than ideal. So we actually need to get really cold in February. And right now I'm having a hard time kind of pulling the trigger on saying that that's going to happen, at least for a 10 to 15 day time period.
Interesting. Does it have an impact on the southern hemisphere at all?
Yeah, it does. It turns out the same things that are controlling the position of our jet stream are also influencing what's going on in South America. And it all comes back to that Madden-Julian oscillation, which we talk about quite a bit. Let's think about the results of it, though. So over the next 15 days, Brazil's eastern and north central growing areas. I'm talking about like the Tocantins, Goiás, Minas Gerais, and then getting over into Mato Grosso. We're expecting that corridor to be quite wet. Now, that's critical for us because they are trying to actively harvest a first crop of soybeans. And therefore, if it's wet, it's the same as us being wet in October. It's going to slow things down, and it may impact the quality of that harvest. Now, what this really does is this wetness right now, from now to the end of the month, is also going to push back any early planting of a safrinha crop, which will be corn and cotton. And you know, and we know, we've been talking about how supportive prices are in Brazil right now for going after big acreage on cotton and corn, especially corn. So we need to watch that carefully. And while that's wet, Brazil's southern growing regions and Argentina are going to go over dry. Now, going dry right now in those areas isn't as critical as a thing right now as it is getting so wet in the northern growing areas. And then, to be honest, if we want to just think purely about U.S. markets, we then need to have Brazil get very dry at the second half of February and just never rain again until April. And then that would really be a tough go of it. But I don't think that is going to happen at this point. But that is what it would take to get some big support by kind of really just ruining a crop down there.
Hey, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions, joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Now, yesterday, I recorded Commodity Week. You can hear the whole of that program up online right now if you'd like at willag.org. And on our home station, you'll hear the whole of the program as well. If you're listening to another station, you'll hear it over the weekend, or you can just find it again at willag.org. Our panelist for the program included Jim McCormick of agmarket.net, Garrett Toy of First Choice Commodities, Mike Zuzlo at globalanalytics.biz, and Kayla Roy from Clayton Pope Commodities. I asked Kayla to introduce herself to begin with, since it was her first time on the air with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, like I said, my name is Kayla Roy from Fairbury, Illinois, my hometown. After my master's, I actually started in the grain business with Cargill. So I did that for about 5 years and then transitioned to the seed business. At Cargill, I had my Series 3 and 30. So after I left Cargill, I started working with Clayton Pope Commodities. And working with growers around the state, with, you know, doing their grain marketing consulting. And I also have a seed agency as well.
Tell me what you made of yesterday's China-U.S. trade phase one agreement and then the reaction of the marketplace.
Yeah, you know, it's a little disappointing. I wouldn't say it's terribly surprising, to be honest with you. I think there was just so much hype going into it. And once we got the deal signed, it just didn't seem like there was a whole lot of teeth to it, to be honest with you. You know, China said that they'll buy based off of market factors. I mean, that seems like a pretty easy out. And, you know, as it sits today, we wouldn't be where China would necessarily go to buy, you know, unless they kind of gave us a token sale there. So pretty disappointing. I'm surprised we were as low as we were today, but, you know, not terribly surprised we were lower after that.
Mike Zuzlo, I know you well enough to know you've crunched some numbers already and probably sent something to your clientele. What did you find?
Yeah, I was surprised by the corn market. It really caught me off guard from a standpoint of why it was down the most. I know there was some negative news about Mexico and their ethanol blend that the Supreme Court pushed back in terms of the amount to be blended in, Todd. But when you see 3 months ago, many in Chicago or many in the commodity markets would say, well, we don't know what our trade's going to be with Japan. We don't know what our trade's going to be with the old NAFTA countries. We don't know what our trade's going to be with China. I think now you don't have to ask those questions. And so I felt like, especially in the corn market, we were trading in the rearview mirror. The trade has not gotten over the USDA crop report and really the no-show as far as a reduced number of production bushels for corn. And they just haven't embraced these trade agreements at this point. But for specific numbers, I'm not skeptical about the $32 billion because the Chinese that I have contacts with are suggesting a 10 million ton shortfall in pork. That's about 26 billion pounds of pork that they're going to need. That's almost what we produce. We'll produce about 26 or 28 billion pounds this coming year in pork. And, you know, when you look at the currency markets and you look at the U.S. dollar breaking to the Chinese currency to a level not seen for 5 or 6 months in terms of the Chinese currency at a 5 to 6 month high, that increases their buying power and increases our selling power. So I think there was another large commodity firm out of Asia in London this week talking about China needing 92 or 95 million tons of soybeans versus USDA's 85 million tons. So if the trade's disappointed about the lack of specifics, I would not be put in that camp.
Hey, Garrett Toy from First Choice Commodities there in Stockton. You do a lot of number crunching as well. USMCA passed out of the Senate. The president says he'll sign it next week, or at least he did when he made the Chinese announcement. I take it that probably just says, yep, Canada and Mexico are good. Not a lot of change there. There are some things in dairy and other sectors that will probably be worthwhile. And then the China numbers, can you look forward into the USDA WASDEs and see when they'll show up? Or have you done some supply and demand balance sheets on your own that give you an idea?
That's what surprises me. You know, I've seen the comments from the former World Ag Outlook Board head, Seth Myers, talking about how the World Ag Outlook Board, or OCE, is going to have to account for this at some point. But, you know, as far as the market is concerned, I mean, they're going to want to see actual purchases, you know. And I agree with Mike. I mean, this is, you know, perhaps created disappointing, but I hate the term buy the rumor, sell the fact. But, you know, where did March corn close at today? The lowest level since 12-12, December 12th. What happened on December 12th? President Trump signed off on the phase one trade deal. You know, the only difference is today, you know, the BRL is 4.2 and on 12-12 is 4.03 and it's going the other direction, you know, in front of a Brazilian crop. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think maybe the trade deal this week or the trade deal signing yesterday did, you know, delay a reaction to last week's WASDE. You know, never mind the fact that, you know, it was the third largest production miss, you know, for a January report on record in corn. And I think it was the second largest production miss, bearish miss for soybeans. So, I mean, we had, you know, a delayed reaction. Nobody really knew what the trade deal signing would bring. But it likely, you know, just what were expectations? You know, China's, the deals are going to point to free trade or better trade. That means that China is going to be under the market in markets that have the biggest arb opportunities for them.
That's Garrett Toy. He's with First Choice Commodities out of Stockton, Illinois. He joined us on our Commodity Week recording on Thursday afternoon, along with Jim McCormick from AgMarket.net out of McHenry, Illinois. Kayla Roy from Fairbury, Illinois. She's with Clayton Pope Commodities. And Mike Zuzulo at GlobalAnalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is up online, and you can listen to the whole of the program right now if you'd like at WILLAG.org. You've been listening, of course, to Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You can find all of our programming there at willag.org or listen to us as a podcast in any of your favorite podcast applications, including NPR One, SoundCloud, Stitcher, the Apple Podcast application, as well as in the Google Play Store. Have a great weekend.